Before we commence, let's take a few moments to worship the Supreme One, the Infinitely Compassionate One, the Sublime One, the Tathagata. To do so, let's take a few moments and recite Namaskara 3 times all together and with me.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
How is everyone today? How was your week? This is a question I will continue to ask, is how was your week? For 2 reasons. One reason is because I want you to remember that a week has gone by. I mean, we're at the 1st of February. A month has gone by. And like we talk about all the time, we don't feel this to be a month has gone by. We don't feel a week has gone by. It feels so sudden that, you know, a month has gone by. So I'll ask you, how was your week? And I really want you to think about this. Did my week go to, was I contemplating a lot this week? Or was I more relaxed in my contemplation? Did I do lots of merits this week? Did I not do so many merits this week? I want you to always, whenever I ask, how was your week, to actually think about this. How was my week truly? Because if it wasn't as good as you hoped, that's okay. Why? Does it have to always be perfect? Well, no, it doesn't need to be, because we're not supposed to be the perfect one. We're people, or we're minds, basically, that can make mistakes. So it doesn't need to be perfect all the time. Because you'll find times where you'll be sat in the Valley Malwa, or you'll be sat somewhere, and sometimes you won't be able to contemplate. So for example, the Valley Malwa is a time where we all sit down and we contemplate on the Dhamma that we know. Sometimes you go sit down and nothing comes to your head. Or what does come to your head isn't the Dhamma. Now, what should we do when that happens? What should we do when that happens? When we sit down, when we're trying to contemplate, or let's say in the evening you're sitting down at Guru Han's sermon and you know you're ready to listen, and then the moment that Guru Han starts talking, your mind starts wandering and thinking about what you're going to have for dinner tonight. What should you do? Because normally, if you were to think that this is what I'm supposed to do, I'm supposed to be contemplating in a deep state of contemplation when I'm at the Valley Malwa. If you have this sort of expectation, what does expectation always lead to? Expectation will always end up with what? The moment you expect, you end up with what? Vexation. If expectation is not fulfilled, well, we're disappointed. I was at the Valley Malwa for an hour and I did nothing. I felt it was a waste of my time. You know what? I'd rather, you know, be sweeping the Dhamma hall. These are thoughts that can come up. Now, what should we do when we have these sort of things? When we're at the Valley Malwa, we're trying to contemplate, but our mind is wandering here and there, not doing what we wanted to do. What should we think about? We should think about exactly that. What? The mind isn't doing what I wanted to do. Because doesn't that show the anicca nature of the mind? The nature that the mind is what? Dependent on what? Cause and effect. Because I can't control it. I sit down and I think I'm gonna contemplate on anicca. And you sit down and you think, okay, anicca, dukkha, anicca, I'm gonna think about anicca about let's say ice cream. I haven't had ice cream for a while, but tonight, you know, this person's coming over and I'll be able to have ice cream. And then I'll be thinking about anicca by then. But then, and you go on a side quest to find out when you're going to next have ice cream. Now, you can do that, but then when you realize that you're going on the side quest, what should you do? Why am I upset? Oh, wait, why am I thinking about this? Why should I have to come back to this contemplative anicca? Why am I upset? Because I have an expectation that what? I'm going to be thinking about anicca. Right, you know, the cause and effect nature, right? How everything is a manifestation and X, Y, and Z. But in reality, all you have to remember is the mind is what? Cause and effect. All you have to do is observe that. Just to realize that. Because thinking is not wrong. Because thinking is what? Cause and effect. When the causes come together, a thought arises. When the causes no longer come together, the thought no longer arises. What's wrong with that? Nothing. But if we have the expectation that, you know what, if when I sit down, for example, there'll be times where you sit down at even Guru Hanuman sermons, and no matter how hard you concentrate, your mind is not listening. Right? Your mind is going here and there, maybe even in a very drowsy state when normally you don't fall asleep in sermons. But you know, today I was asleep the entire sermon. Why was this? What's wrong with me? Yes, what is wrong with you? With what? You meaning what? What's wrong with this sense of self? Why do I feel that this is what's happened to me? Now, that doesn't mean that we accept it and we think, okay, this is how it is, and I'm going to fall asleep in all sermons. No, we're not going to do that. What we're doing here is we're trying to understand that it's all cause and effect. So what should I do? Change the causes. Another thing, every time we talk about cause and effect, I'll continue to remind you how relaxing it is to understand that everything is cause and effect. We can't control effects. What can we do? Change the causes. All we can do is change the causes. So when you're at a sermon and you're falling asleep, now you think about the causes. What is causing me to fall asleep? It could be that my mind is wandering off. Okay, why is the mind wandering off? It could be that, you know, I was working very hard last night. Right? I was up all night. Or it could be as simple as, you know, maybe it's just Aripada. And then let me go to the Buddha Kutiya and chant some Buddha Guna. Or chant some Aramaitri to see if that helps. See, all you have to do is focus on the causes. That's the thing. The journey to Nibbana is not about the effect. We never focus on the effect of Nibbana. That's why you never hear, you know, Guru Hanuman or your teachers explain the effect of Nibbana. Right? You know, once you become an Arahant, you know, this is what happens to the mind, and this is what happens when you go into Parinibbana. You don't hear that because we don't focus on the effect. What do we focus on? The causes, because you will be able to experience the effect for yourself. Because there is something that really does happen, is when we start talking about the effect, the mind can have this idea that if this is the effect, I should have these effects. And sometimes even artificially created. That's why, you know, when you hear stories about the great Arahants, you know, how they were very peaceful and all this. That's why, you know, when you associate this idea with Arahants and, you know, looking down and with an arms ball going forward, that's why sometimes when you start listening to Dhamma, you realize that I have to be like this. You know, I have to change the way I walk, the way I talk. I have to change all of that. Because we're focused on the effect, not on the causes. So inside, you're burning with desire, aversion, delusion. But outside, you're, you know, in a very tranquil, serene, and pretend, you're almost showing a facade of something completely different. That's why we have to focus on the causes. The causes. What are the causes for me to attain Nibbana? What are the causes that I need to accumulate? That's why, you know, practice, that's why association with noble people, noble friends, Kalyan Mitras. That's why we keep talking about this. That's why, you know, listening to the Dhamma, contemplating on the Dhamma. Because if we asked, what is it to be an Arahant? It's when all those causes come together and the effect manifests. What are the causes? Well, there are many causes. The merits, the contemplation, the understanding. But only when all these causes come together do we have the effect. And it's beautifully explained by the example of the sculptor. I remember long ago, I think one of our monks gave me this amazing example of what a Buddha truly is. He asked me, have you ever seen a sculpture? Like rock sculptures? I said, yeah, I've seen loads. I've seen many. You know, we've got many Buddha statues, right, made out of pure rock. And he explained to me that one of these statues took many, many years to make, maybe even lifetimes to make, you know, sculpting bit by bit and taking out and sculpting it into a beautiful statue, basically. And he said, you know, something that he believes is that in that rock, before the sculpture went about sculpting it, there was already that statue in. So there was already a Buddha statue in the rock before he even touched it. All that the sculptor did was took out the unnecessary parts by chipping away one bit at a time. Now, I don't know if you ever try to chisel a rock, but it's not hard, it's not easy. It's one of the most difficult things. And what you realize is, at one point, a small flake of rock will fall off. At other points, a massive chunk will fall off. But the sculptor will continue to use his chisel and hammer to just chisel away. And he said, you know, your practice is the same thing here. Inside each and every one of our minds, we have the Buddha. We have an Arahant mind, right? Or a Buddha mind. However, it has been layered upon layered of defilements and of ignorance. All we have to do is take our chisel and hammer and chisel away. At one moment, only a small flake will fall off. At other moments, a massive chunk will fall off. But all we can do is just chisel away. Chisel away by the unnecessary things. When will the Buddha mind arise? When all of it's chiseled away. When all the causes come together, will the Buddha mind arise? Now, when we talk about the Buddha mind, we're not talking about the Sammasambuddha here. Right? We're talking about a pure mind. A mind with no defilements. A mind with no ignorance. That's what we're talking about. So all we have to do is chisel away. Chisel and chisel and chisel and chisel. We're trying to put together these causes. Because at the end, what comes out at the end? An amazing, beautiful statue. The statue of the Buddha. See, if we were focused on the effect, how far do you think we'll be? Just imagine someone actually gives you a rock and says, you know, make something out of this. Right? And they give you a chisel and a hammer. If you're focused on the effect, if you're very focused on what the effect should be, how many times will you actually hit the chisel? You hit it once, you hit it twice, and nothing's happening. You hit it three times, four times, nothing's happening. Hit it five, and it's cracked in a really weird way. Most likely we'll give up. Because no matter how hard we try, we're not getting to what we expect. But a true artist doesn't care about the outcome. A true artist cares about what? The process of it. the single brushstroke, the single hit on the chisel. That's what they enjoy. The actual making of it. The effect, the end effect, they can look at and say, wow, I did that. But they're more interested in the actual making of it. That's why you hear, you know, many, many artists like Vincent van Gogh, in his lifetime, how much was his painting sold for? In his lifetime? Very little. His paintings would be used to, you know, they'll be filled. His paintings were filled in his house, not used whatsoever, because there was no worth. Only once he passed away. Once he passed away, was his painting sold for millions and millions. If he was alive at this age, like in this age, where almost all of his pictures were up in museums, would he have lived a terrible life that he had lived? That's the question. Because he wasn't focused on how much it would be sold for. He was focused on what? I enjoy the drawing of it. I enjoy the putting the pen or the paintbrush to the canvas. So that's why we don't need to focus on the effect. Where do I have to be? We need to focus on the process. Enjoy the process. Enjoy the contemplation. Enjoy your life basically. Because I'm talking to pretty much everyone here who is someone who is practicing the path, who has a strong determination to attain Nibbana. So enjoy your life. Enjoy what you're doing. Enjoy listening to sermons. Enjoy going to the Venmo. Enjoy every part of your life, because every part of your life are the causes that lead to you to where? The effect. That's the thing. We don't care about the effect. We care about what? The causes. Put the causes together. Enjoy putting the causes together. Enjoy the contemplation. Enjoy being in the association of extraordinary people. Enjoy doing all these merits. Enjoy your life. Because remember, this is your last one, hopefully. Hopefully, yeah. Who knows? Something can happen. But we're all aiming for the end. So if we get what we're hoping for, well, this is our last one. You know, when the Buddha, when he was born, he took 7 steps into and then looked up and said, this was my last life. There's no becoming after this. Well, we are hoping to say the same thing, aren't we? If this is our last life, enjoy it. Enjoy the path. Enjoy the journey to Nibbana. Because once you really enjoy it, that becomes your motivation to go forward. See, if I asked you, going back, and if I remind you of your school years, we all had a subject that we enjoyed. Most of the time, the subject that we enjoyed, we did well at. That's why, you know, if I had asked you what is your favorite subject, it's usually one that you're really good at. Very rarely do you find a person who likes a subject that they're terrible at. And that's why, when we like a subject, we do well in it. Because we enjoy it. For example, I think, from my experience, I feel that a lot of people who enjoy certain subjects enjoy the actual act of failing. For example, I remember I once had a friend who enjoyed getting math questions wrong. Because that became a challenge for him. And he enjoyed a challenge. So for example, when his teacher was one of the most amazing teachers in the world. But whenever he was a very bright student. And so he would, before the rest of his class, he would always do the answers, and he's just waiting, doing nothing. And so he would ask the teacher, like, I'm done. And so the teacher would give him an incredibly hard question, right? And literally the proof of the question would take the entire A4 paper, basically. And he would answer it. He would try. He enjoyed getting it wrong. Because why? He knew, I got it wrong. Okay, let me try harder. I got it wrong again. Let me try harder. He enjoyed the art of failing. Which is very strange, right? It's very strange because we all grow up thinking that, you know, failing is terrible. Failing is bad. We hate failing. That's why, you know, that's why if you believe you're not a good artist, 99% of the time you won't draw. Because why? You think I'm a terrible artist. I can't draw. You know, look. Why should I draw? Like, you know, we've got many, many better artists out there. Or if you think that, you know, I'm not good at English, that's why you won't write. But if you think you are good at English, that's why you will write. Because we are very focused on the effect. What is my effect? We don't care about the process. That's why this person who liked failing enjoyed maths. See, this is the difference between, as I remember, this is the difference between a growth mindset and a fixed mindset. Someone with a fixed mindset thinks, you know, a fixed mindset thinking that this is who I am. I'm not going to change. You know, I can only do this, this, and this, and that's it. Someone with a growth mindset is someone who's always looking to improve, who doesn't mind failing. That's why, you know, take upon tasks that you think that you won't, that you find hard to do. So, for example, let's say, you know, you think you're terrible at, say, writing a story. And say someone asks you, can you write me a story? Don't immediately say no. Say, I'm not good at it, but I'll try. I've never done it before, but I'll try. Because if I fail, well, that's a point that I can learn from. But if I don't, but, you know, who knows? I'm up for the challenge. So, for example, let's say, you know, when you're at the Valley Mall, take things that you find incredibly difficult. Say you've always thought that, you know, chocolate has been the biggest part of my life. I can never get rid of my addiction to chocolate. Take chocolate. It's okay to fail. Because we're not focused on the effect. We're focused on the process. How can I think about this? How can I contemplate about this? Because now you're looking for the path. And what your mind is very used to doing is whenever you want something, it will do whatever it can to get it. That's why when you have the strong determination to attain Nibbana, your mind will stop at nothing until it gets it. That's why if we feel that, you know, I'm slowing down on my path, I'm not really focused on Nibbana. Why? It's because your value that you've placed for Nibbana isn't as strong. You know, I don't think I'm practicing enough. I don't think I'm doing enough for my Nibbana. Why don't you think that? It's because you think that, you know, that there's something else out there that has more value than Nibbana. Therefore, the mind will take that path than Nibbana. So these are the sort of things that you have to ask yourself. What value have I put in Nibbana? What sort of value have I put in Nibbana? Because once your value of Nibbana is very high, your mind will stop at nothing. No power in this universe can stop it. That's why the Buddha, right, before as a Bodhisattva, he had the strongest determination that, you know, I'm going to find the truth. And what stopped him? Life after life, he went closer and closer. You hear all these Jataka tales and all these stories about his past lives. Life after life, looking for the truth, until what? Until 2,500 years ago, when he was born in the clan of the Shakyans, under the Bodhi tree. He attained Nibbana. He gained the knowledge of the universe. If a mind can become a Buddha, if a mind can become the Buddha, what can't your minds be? That's the thing. Once you put your mind to it, there's nothing you can't get done. So enjoy the process. Don't focus on the effect. Have the effect as a guideline. That's okay. So you can read these stories and have a guideline. This is what I'm supposed to be. How close am I to this? What do I have to change? So have the effect as a guideline, but don't expect the effect. Enjoy the actual putting together the courses. In other words, enjoy your life. Again, I'm talking to people who have sacrificed their lives for Nibbana, right? Whose main focus is Nibbana. Enjoy your lives. Enjoy what you do. Because when you start enjoying it, that becomes your motivation to take a step further. Because I know, I don't need to start talking to you all about, you know, how you should help another person. Right? You know, whenever someone's upset, help them. Because I know that's something that you find almost second nature to you. Why? Because you enjoy it. For example, if we had someone who's never been in the monastery come to the monastery for the first time, 99% of you will rush to help them. Because you enjoy helping a person. So you stop at nothing. You'll try whatever you possibly can. If you can help them by just talking, you'll talk. If you can help them by just doing, you'll do. Because for example, let's say we had someone who couldn't speak English, couldn't speak Sinhala or English. Still, I know 99% of you. See, I wish I can say 100, but there's always that 1%. You know, we can't do something about that. There's always that 1%. But 99% of you will still rush to help them, even though you don't know the language. Like I get to see this a lot. Like, you know, how sometimes, for example, like some of our monks can't speak English. But that doesn't stop them. That's why, if I remember, almost 95 or above percent of our monks are learning English. Learning English and I think almost 99% of them are learning another language. Why? Because they want to help. They want to help anyone and everyone. So, if that's the mindset they have. And with that, they also have the mindset of what? They have the mindset of, okay, how can I attain Nibbana as well? You see, this is the mindset that we have to put together in ourselves. The mindset of, you know, knowing where you want to go to Nibbana and enjoying the process. You know, we always talk about this. You know, the Atlas books, the first page says what? Success is what? A destination? Success is a journey, not a destination. Because the actual success of your life is a journey you take. When you get to destination, there is no success there because that's it, full stop. Success is a journey. You enjoy the journey. Another really great, good question I really want you to think about is, how much are you willing? Oh, what will it take for you to take? Would you take a massive risk? Or would you risk your life for things? Now, the other day, I was able to talk to a group of people, and they're explaining to me a story, right? And I want to read the story because I found this very interesting and something that got not just myself, but all of us thinking. So, I don't know. Yeah, so I don't know the real details of the story, but it is a story that I do want to share. I don't think it's a real story. It's a made up story. However, it's something that got me rethinking. And that story is there's a group of people who are living in debt. right? They are debt to, you know, the banks, to other people, to loan sharks and whatnot. And they're entirely in debt. They have no way to escape. But fortunately, they find out that there is, a person comes up to them and says, you know, we know you're in debt, and we know a way you can come out of it. However, there's a challenge involved. And so these many, many people go through this challenge. However, they find out that these challenges, if they win the challenge, they get, if I remember, like billions of dollars. No, sorry, billions of whatever cash money they had. However, they're risking it with what? With their life. Meaning what? If they fail a challenge, instead of getting money, they get what? A bullet to the head. Now, when I was talking with this group of children, this group of people, not just children, but this group of young adults, they'll explain to me how how stupid that is. Would you sacrifice your life for a ball, for, if I remember correctly, a pig filled with cash? Would you ever sacrifice your life for a pig filled with cash? And they're telling me how stupid it is and how no one will actually do such a thing. Funnily enough, that's what we all do. We put our own lives at risk for a pig filled with cash. Some pigs are filled with cash, other pigs are filled with other things. But for this example, I'll take the pig filled with cash. Do we not? We may not take... So, every day, with that goal in mind, so if I remember correctly, it's a billions, I think maybe thousands, I don't even know, millions of dollars or something. And they are willing to sacrifice their own lives. In the beginning, when they realize it's life and death, right, they're given a choice whether to stay or whether to go. And funnily enough, more than half of them agreed and said they want to stay. They want to continue playing the game, realizing they understand that only one person will end up surviving. One person will end up getting all this millions of dollars. And everyone else will have to what? Have to have a bullet in their head. But they're okay with it. Because they look at the end goal. They look at the pig filled with cash and they think, wow, this is going to be the solution to all my problems. That's what I want. Now, we in all of our lives, we have a pig filled with cash. A goal where we think that, you know, once we achieve this, all my problems will be finished. All my issues will be done. And money is one of the biggest ones. And we're ready to put our lives at risk. Do you not believe me? Every morning, for this pig with cash, we go out to earn some money. Right? Let's take the example of going onto the road, right, and driving to work. When you drive to work, aren't you trusting that this car is working properly? You're putting your life in the hands of this car. Agreed? Not just the car, but the person in front of you. You're trusting the person in front of you to not suddenly brake. You're trusting the people either side not to, you know, swerve into you. You're trusting the person behind you not to, you know, hit you. So when you're on the road, aren't you putting your life at risk, hoping that you'll get the pig with cash? The big pig with cash? You're hoping for that. Therefore, you put your life at risk. For a bigger pleasure, something you think will be the answer to your questions, answer to your problems. What are you willing to sacrifice? And most people, they sacrifice the most valuable thing they own. What's that? their human life. You know, I'm only going to sacrifice 4 years of my life, 5 years of my life, 6 years of my life. Four, five, six? How can you risk it? Four, five, 6 years of your life, how can you risk it? How do you know what's going to happen after these 4 years, 5 years, 6 years? Can you truly trust that you'll be able to be alive in 5 years? Or are you putting your life in the hands of chance? Maybe I'll be able to, maybe not. I know not you, not all of you, but there are people outside who, you know, they want to attain Nirvana, they want to get this done, but you know, I just want to spend another couple years outside. Yeah, I'm gonna spend maybe a couple months just doing this, and then I'll be in the monastery. I'll be practicing the path. I'll attain Nirvana. Aren't you betting on your life? Aren't you risking your life for this pig filled with cash? See, for different people, it'll be different things. So for example, some people, the pig isn't filled with cash. The pig is filled with a piece of paper, a scroll. That says, this award has, this certificate is awarded to so-and-so for this. A degree, a diploma. Maybe a certificate in whatever sports they have or whatever sports they're playing. For other people, it will be maybe a car or a house. But that's the thing that keeps them, that's the thing that drives them forward. Just like these players will keep on playing the game until one person gets the money. Lying, cheating, backstabbing. In order to get the chance of what they think to be the solution. But is it the solution? Are you willing to put your life at risk to something that you think to be the solution? I'm in debt. There's a pig filled with money. There are 250 people. There's a chance of 1 in 250 people to take this prize. But yet, every single person thinks what? That one person? It's going to be me. It's funny to see how, it's not just, because that's a story, but in reality, we see this happen. How a bag of money can blind people. They say that, you know, they say, like, if you wanted to make a deal with anyone, all you need to do is have a large enough sum. And everyone will talk, they say. Because money blinds. It's not money. What's blinding them? Their greed blinds them. Because they think that by getting this, I will become eternally happy. By getting this pig filled with cash, I will become eternally happy. That's all I want, is that, and that's it. See, for each and every one of us, we all, even now, we still have a pig filled with cash. Now, we're not going to put Nibbana in it, because you can't put Nibbana in something. You can't put Nibbana in an object, can you? But there is something that each and every one of our lives, we are aiming to achieve, that's not Nibbana. And we're ready to risk whatever it takes. We're ready to do whatever it takes to get there. All we have to do is break this. For example, there'll be some of us who think, you know what? I want to take Nibbana, but also I want this as well. So, you have the main aim of you have Nibbana as an aim. But also, you want something else. let's take chocolate. You want something else.
Say
status. You want something else. A title. Nibbana is your main focus, but there are other focuses out there. These are the things in your money banks. These are the things that that are in your money banks, right? This pig of this hung up over your head. Now, you are going to be working for your main aim, but you have side projects as well, don't you? You have other things that you want to do, other things you want to get done. And you're ready to risk what? You're ready to bet with what? Your? The most valuable thing that you own is your human life. You're ready to bet with your human life. You're ready to risk your human life. You think, okay, I want to get chocolate. I'm going to spend. Oh, let's just take a good number. An hour of my human life for chocolate. Hoping that this chocolate will give me what? Will give me eternal satisfaction. But it doesn't. So no matter how much you take, the pig is still hung up. Status. I'm going to spend 5 years building up a name for myself. Again, that's hung up. No matter how much you try to get a status, at the end, you start off exactly where you started. With nothing. The title. Now, let's take a step away from Nibbana, right? Or our lives. You want a car, or money, car, job, house, family. How much time are you willing to spend to achieve this? How much time of your valuable life are you willing to spend to achieve this? Are you ready to risk your life for it? Because to achieve all the money you need, let's say you take 10 years, you are betting with 10 years of your life that you're going to be happy after this. You're betting that with, you know, say 6 years of your life that you're going to get this job and you're going to be happy. You're betting with 2 years of your life for this. Well, family, how long does a family take? Say 30? 30 years of your life for that. A house, I'll say 5 years. You're betting on your human life. Because we don't bet with money. We don't have money to bet with. We have what? Our human lives. We bet with our human lives hoping that, you know, you will be able to achieve this pig filled with what we need, tied to the sky. We look at that in awe, thinking, you know, one day I'll achieve this. Ready to risk everything. Ready to risk everything you own for it. Just like that game. just like that game. The players are ready to risk their own lives in order to take home the money prize. See, when we're talking, what we start to realize is how everyone has the same thing. How everyone, even though they believe that they're not like that, they have the same thing. So some of them are in school, some of them are going to uni, some of them, they don't have a job, some of them have jobs. But each and every one of them have this pig filled with cash hanging in front of their head. So it's not just cash for them, it could be different things, but an aim in front of them. And they're ready to risk their lives. Like I said, some of them, they drive to work, ready to take their life at risk in hope that, you know, no one does anything to them. Trusting everyone else. You know, the main cause of death in this entire world is what? Road accidents. Yes, it will happen to everyone, but who? It can happen to anyone, but who? When I drive, I'm the one driving. I trust myself, don't I? When I drive, I'm the one under the wheels. I trust my driving skills. That's what exactly what everyone else said before they fell into a fatal accident, didn't they? You know, you will take your walk down the street to get some, say, chocolate from the local store. Yet you're putting your life at risk, are you not? I remember I was hearing a story where a young girl had lost her brother. Why? Because he was going outside to do something. I can't remember what he was trying to do. But I think it was something as to go to the nearest shop or something like that. And unfortunately, there was a person who was in a car who was drunk and was driving. And unfortunately, had hit the brother. The brother, all the brother wanted was to go to the nearest store, maybe to buy a piece of chocolate for his sister. But in the end, lost his life. So he had put his own life at risk for a piece of chocolate. Don't we put our life at risk? In very subtle ways, don't we put our own life at risk? In hope for you know, one day I'll get this big piggy filled with money, filled with whatever goals I want. One day I'll get it. And they say that greed is the root of all evil. They say greed is the root of all evil. Do I agree? Not just greed, is it? Ignorance is the root of all evil. But they say greed is the root of all evil. Because once you want something, whenever someone comes to oppose, now, by hook or by crook, you'll try to get this. Because you realize this, like one of the biggest things that you have in that we all have in this pig filled with cash is pride, is ego. That's why, you know, we always look for a place. And that's why when someone comes to oppose you, that's why immediately we pull a massive wall in front of us to protect it. For example, that's why if someone came up and showed your mistakes, so if someone says, like, why did you do such a thing? Like, why did you do this? And immediately if you think, you know, why is, like, you know, I did this because of this, and you're trying to protect who? This pride, this ego, this sense of self, this jati. Thinking that, you know, jati is there, and I'm protecting jati. Oh, I did this because of this, this, and this. I mean, that's what I'm supposed to do, aren't I? You know, sometimes I've known several people who are the master of giving excuses. Master of giving excuses. To the point that you just need to just stay shut. Because no matter what you say, they have something to oppose it. Why do you do this? Because I did this, this, and 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 this. And all you do is stay shut until it's like, ah, right, that's why you did it. And because there's no point. Because why? They're trying to protect what? I'm there. Self is there. Self is there. Self needs to be protected. And I'll protect self at all costs. It's funny when especially you'll see this with younger children, where due to their lack of views, their lies are very obvious. Several times, I remember even back in my lay life, that you know, whenever a child lies, it's sometimes very obvious. But if you confront them and say, "Aren't you lying?" What do they say? "No, I'm not lying. You're lying." And you think, you realize that this is ego at play. That they have someone to protect. Something to protect. You know, I'm there. I have to be protected. This is why we have to stop playing the game. We have to stop playing this game and realize why we're playing the game. Instead of looking at how can I achieve this, we have to think about why do I want to achieve this? Instead of looking at how can I save myself or how can I protect my ego and pride, you have to ask yourself, why am I trying to protect ego and pride? Because once you realize, so to come back to the example of ego, I am important. I am there. Because I'm there, I'm trying to protect me. If you ask yourself, why am I trying to protect my pride? You come to the answer that, protect who? Your answer becomes what? Protect who? Because you realize what? When you ask yourself, who am I trying to protect? Your answer is what? It's like, you know, it's like there's a room and you filled it with gold and silver and whatnot, right? And, you know, whenever a thief comes, you're ready to protect it. But then when someone asks you, what are you trying to protect? And you open the door and you find that there's nothing inside. Exact feeling. Because why? You're trying to protect yourself, right? You're trying to protect your pride and ego. But when you open the door to ask, what am I trying to protect? You realize the room is what? Empty. There's no one there, nothing there. Except a feeling. Except a feeling, a sense of self. This is where, you know, this is why the Dhamma is the only solution. You can try to take the pig. You can try to achieve the pig. But no matter how many times you've won the game, you'll come back for more. One day it'll be money, the next day it'll be freedom. When next is freedom, then it's power. When it's power, then it's something else. Because the human mind can never be satisfied. Why can't it be satisfied? The mind arises, the mind passes away. The passed away mind, gone. How can you satisfy something that is always disappearing? It's there, it's gone. It's there, it's gone. It's there, it's gone. How can you satisfy something that's coming and going? You can't. Because no matter how hard you try to satisfy it, the next moment it's going to be gone, and therefore you need more. That's why you can never have enough. That's why no amount of money can make you happy. Because it's very easy. You ask anyone, and they say, you know what, if I got this amount of money, I'll be happy. If I were just able to pay off my debts, I'll be happy. If they got enough money to pay off their debts, is that enough? They need more. What about a house? You know, I just need one small room just to sleep. That's all I need. Right? That's what they say. But once they get that, what's next? I need a small room for the bathroom, but then me and my wife both need to use the bathroom at the same time, therefore I need two bathrooms. And that's not going to be satisfied either. Jobs? We're satisfied with our jobs, aren't we? Yeah, we live in a world where everyone is satisfied with their jobs. That no one wants a raise or a bonus, nothing. No, because we're never satisfied. We are always looking for one bit better. Because once you've achieved it, you need more. It's not enough. Because once you've achieved it, you realized, this isn't giving me what I need. I need more of it. That's why, you know, you hear this a lot. I remember several people I've talked to, that they're on a diet. They're on a strict diet, you know, none of this, none of that. They're going to cut out all this chocolate and all this. But the one moment they take one piece of chocolate, that's it. Diet's out. Because the one time they realize, okay, their pig is already there, but when they try to achieve the pig and they thought they achieved it, then they realize, oh, I got it, then I lost it. I need more. I need more and more and more and more. That's why no matter how many times you take this pig, no matter how much money or time and effort and lives you choose or lives you take, you sacrifice to take this pig, at the end of the day, it's useless. That's why the game is such a beautiful analogy. Because there's no end to it. There is no end. The only way out is by asking, why do I need this? Why am I going after this? Why am I trying to protect, why am I trying to protect me? Because when you start asking these questions, you realize, who am I trying to protect? Why do I need this? Do I really need all of these? Will I be satisfied when I achieve all of these? Because now you're giving an opening for the Dhamma to come in. You're opening your front door and saying, Dhamma, now it's your time to come in, please. Welcome to my humble abode. Stay as long as you possibly can and help me clean all this mess. Now you open the door. For as long as you're going after these, your door is not open. Your window is open, so Dhamma can come in and look in through a window and say, you have to clean this and this, but your door's not open. Your door's not open. Open your front doors. Ask yourselves, why? Why do I need this? Why do I need that? Ask yourself why and open the door. Open your front door and welcome the Dhamma. And let the Dhamma come in and point everything out. Because what is it that you truly want? What is it that the mind truly needs? Freedom. Freedom from this race, going after this piggy, going after this cash-filled piggy in its freedom. So open your front doors. Ask yourself, why? Why am I searching for this? Why am I looking for that? Why am I sacrificing? Why am I ready to sacrifice 10 years for $1 million? Why am I ready to sacrifice, only just 4 years? I'm just going to spend 4 years in you know, I'm going to do 4 years, sacrifice 4 years of my life, and then after 4 years, will I be truly happy? Will you? Are you ready to sacrifice 4 years? Are you ready to bet on 4 years of your life? 4 years? 5 years? 6 years? 2 years? Like, how can you guarantee? How can you give a guarantee that you will be able to maybe, like, you know, in a year's time, 1 year, just a year? Yeah, 365 days, not a long time, is it? Nothing will happen in that sort of time period, right? A year is enough to create or destroy a life. Not just a year, a month is more than enough to create or destroy a life. That's why, you know, these are things that we have to continue to really ask ourselves, am I still following this? Am I still looking for these sort of things? Because day by day, it's not just money. I don't think it's just money or something. For each and every one of this will be different. Our pig is filled with different things. One of the hardest things to do is to actually find out what's inside the pig. Because there, you know, as you look inside the pig, there'll be some things that are very prominent, but there are some things that are actually hidden. To find out exactly what's in your pig, right? This pig field, if you're this pig, is one of the hardest parts. What is it that you're truly looking for? Because sometimes the mind will play tricks on us. Sometimes the mind itself will play tricks. Will try to, you know, make yourself feel okay, feel good about something when you shouldn't have. It will trick itself. The mind will trick itself. So for example, if I have money, then I can donate more to other people. I can help more people. I mean, yes, you can think that, but still, you have this strong desire for this. Yes, you have the idea to help. But yeah, you're tricking your mind thinking that I'm trying to help other people. But in order to help, you're now earning. You know, if I had an extra room in my house, maybe someone can come whenever they need it. Yes, that's a good idea. I mean, I'm not saying that's a bad idea. None of those are bad ideas. But you have to ask yourself, is that what you truly want? Or the mind is tricking? Is that the mind tricking you? There are hundreds, I think there are many ways. I can't remember the number, but there are many ways your own mind can trick. Your own mind can trick you. It pulls up an illusion that this is what you want. Just to make you feel what? Oh, I'm doing a good thing. So look inside your pigs. Look inside your pigs and try to find out what is it that you're looking for. Is it just Nibbana? Is it just enlightenment? Is it just, you know, understanding the truth that's in there? Or are there side quests? Are there other things that you are hoping to get? Because if you are, you're running after a pig filled with cash, ready to sacrifice your most valuable thing that you own for nothing. For nothing. That's why, you know, when you look outside, right, when you look outside the gates of the monastery, this is what you see. People in their cars driving in hope to get this pig filled with cash. And you see people, you know, working their hats off, right, in order to get that pig filled with money. Lying, cheating, backstabbing, murdering, all in order for what? That bag. because they don't realize these have consequences. I think, you know, something that really changes the way we see the world is when you start to realize karma vipaka. That what you do has an effect. Because until then, your actions don't have an outcome. Okay, I throw this pen and I hit someone, so what? But once you truly understand karma vipaka, now you realize, okay, I'm going to hit them and that's the karma for me. What does that mean? It's going to come back to who? It has to come back here someday. One day, this a mind will arise feeling pain. Because that's what I've given. I think understanding the concept of karma is one of the most important. But yet, in this world, is everyone born with the understanding of karma vipaka? This is why when you walk outside these gates of the monastery, look at everyone with the utmost compassion. Because they're running after a red herring, thinking that this is going to make them incredibly happy. But unfortunately, they end up where? They end up with a bullet in their head. And they end up with nothing. They end up exactly where they started. Back at square one. So whenever you go outside the gates of the monastery and you see these people, so every Sunday, fortunately I have the ability to go to, we do a Dhamma school at the RI school, the Royal International School. And every time we go out, I get to see all these people. And this is what I think. How many of these people don't know where they're going? How many of these people are falling into the same hole that the person in front of them fell into? The analogy of the blind line, the blind queue, where it's everyone is blind and they're all following a blind person, falling into the same trap that everyone else is falling into. All following this. See, we have to feel compassion towards all these people. This is when you really, really understand. Because again, we're not talking about people here, are we? Never do we talk about people. What do we talk about? Minds. Now, what mind? Which mind? Whose mind? What mind? Which mind? Whose mind? No. Minds. Because one mind, again, in 2D sense, right? One of our minds can go through this. Next mind may not. So we should feel compassionate towards all minds. That's the thing. These stories, these analogies, these are absolutely amazing. Because these are things that, you know, get us to think. Get people to think. Am I following after this pig? Feel big, filled with cash. Am I still following this? Or am I free from that? So really do feel compassionate towards minds. Because remember, when a mind has a necessity, when a mind needs something, it will make its way. I think that is the most dangerous thing. A mind with necessity. Because nothing can stop them. Nothing can stop them except a stronger view. That's why, you know, I strongly believe that, you know, the children at our monastery are the most fortunate people in this world. They are the most fortunate people in this world. Because why? Whenever they have necessity, what happens? They get the view. They get a stronger view to break it. The other day, I was talking to a child who promised me, right? They're promising me, and, you know, they wanted to come and stay, but they were like, you know what? Sorry, now my mother really wants this to happen, but really wants me to come, wants me to stay, right? Not that his mother wants him to stay. He has his own intentions, but his mother, he uses the excuse of his mother. My mother really wants me to stay, but I'm going to come back in just next year, just 2 years, 2 years. So the question you can ask him is, okay, how can you guarantee that? Take my word for it. You can just take my word for it. I'll be here in 2 years. How can you guarantee that? Where can you guarantee that? 2 years? How can you guarantee 2 years? When I can't guarantee my next moment, how can you guarantee 2 years? And I also ask him, like, okay, how can you guarantee that in this 2 years that you... So he's like, you know what, I really want to do this. Every day I'm going to wake up early in the morning, right? Give a Buddha puja. Right, give a Buddha puja, and I'm gonna do this, all these empty promises. It's very empty. Right? I'm gonna do all this because I really want to come. But then the only question I asked is, okay, when the outside world gives you views, who is there to break them? When the outside world, bombards you with views of how amazing this pig is, who is there to stop them? What view is there to stop them? Can you give me a guarantee that there's going to be someone who's going to stop him? Amma's going to stop it for me. But Amma's following after the same pig that you are. How can she do it? This is the thing. This is why the children at our monastery are the most fortunate children. They are so lucky to have so many amazing people with them. Whenever they have, whenever they see a pig, they have a teacher in their back going like, that's a pig, an empty promise. That's an empty pig, nothing inside it. This is what you need. And it shows them the path of Dhamma. This is why they're the most fortunate people in this world. Extremely lucky. Our 18 minus anagarikas, our noble hearts. And that's the thing. Our monastery doesn't stop there. I remember in a previous sermon done by Guru Mahal, Guru Mahal was explaining how he's going to start a Montessori. Oh dear. When the Montessori starts, right? Then we have, little children running around. But still, they are incredibly lucky. They are more meritorious than all of us put together. Because they get to associate all of you. Getting views of the Dhamma since the beginning. The suffering that we've all been through. The suffering that we've all been through, they won't. Going through school, going through work, doing all this sort of stuff, the suffering we've all been through, they don't need to do any of that. They have a get out of jail free card, right, for the rest of their life. That's the thing. This is why, Guru Andhra and all of our teachers, their compassion knows no bounds. That's how amazing our teachers are. Because more children, Montessori, they don't even know their ABCs, 1, 2, 3s, but yet they're here with the association of great people, learning the Dhamma, learning the truth of the world. And not only that, of course, they'll be given the education and all this other stuff. But they'll be giving it, they'll be receiving the education the right way. Because no other school can teach them the Dhamma, the truth, the reality. No other school can do that. When I was talking with this child, one of our other monks were there as well. And I asked him the question, like, you know, where are your school friends now? And he explained that, you know, one of his best friends, a friend that he was with his entire school life, is currently in jail. Someone that he's been and he's associated his entire life is currently in jail. And so he said, you know, because I came to the monastery, am I safe? But if I was with my friend, where would I be? In the same place he is. However, the pig is strong. The pig is hung up and there's lights beaming at it. Every time you walk, you talk, you see this thing, and every moment, only thing that people talk about is what? How amazing this pig is. You know, I know the other day I went on a trip to Hawaii, and it was amazing. The water was like this, the beaches were like this, the food was like this. It was amazing. They only talk about how great this is. One group of people in this world that says the opposite, that this is what causes all this to happen. And who are they? Those are the Shravakas. People are listening to the Dhamma. People who are following Dhamma. Attapurisapugala. This is why, you know, I don't need to tell you that, you know, help other people, right? Do your best to help other people. I don't need to tell you that, because that's already in your, you know, that's already sunk into, you know, your bone marrows. Right? From, you help people from within. I don't need to tell all of you, but, you know, there are people. Yeah. 7 point something billion people who are still running after this. But the thing is, we can't help them until what? We can't help them until what? We stop our chase. Because you can still help them well while you're chasing for this, but that's not going to be true help, is it? That's going to be hypocrisy. Don't chase after this, but I'm chasing. All right, but you don't chase. Yeah, that's what parents do, right? Parents will be like, you know, Buddha, you know, you should come here and do all this. But, you know, I'm still going to do this, but you do this. Parents, or I remember I had an uncle who would, you know, drink until he had, like, alcohol pouring out of his pores. But yeah, he'll come up to me and be like, Buddha, never drink. Right? And I'm like, but you do it and you're telling me not to? Like, of course. Like, that was enough for me to think, I'm never going to do it. But, you know, he's following this and telling other people not to. How strong is his message? Well, if he had to say, for example, I don't know, that liver cancer and he stopped it, then he could say, look, I drank and look, I got liver cancer. You don't drink, so you don't get this. But, you know, he is as drunk as a sailor, right? But he's telling me not, but he's telling other people not to. Just as though, if we're still following after this piggy, how can we tell others not to? See, the first thing that we have to do is help ourselves. Help ourselves stop following our pigs. Stop following our pigs and ask ourselves why. Why am I still following this pig? Why do I still see value in this? Why do I still see value in that? Because in all of our pigs, until we become arhants. Okay. So like this, right? So let's take this example. So like I was saying, like, you know, until we become arhants, there'll be one thing that's going to continue to be in our banks, or in our piggies. And that is, you know, me, I. Until we become arahants, that is something that will still be there. So in our pigs, Let's do this, right? So this is the same way that you can do for all of this, because there's only one way out of this, and that's the way of the Dhamma. So you're going to have to look at my amazing drawings, right? Okay, so until we become arahants, in our pigs, two legs is enough, right? Two legs is more than enough. It's a two-legged pig. In our pigs, we have the sense of, or we have the feeling of self, right? We have, you know, ego, pride, and whatnot. And therefore, you know, for as long as we are focused, for as long as we are aware, mindfully aware, this becomes what? This, for as long as we become, we are aware, we realize that this is there. Therefore, we will take the Dhamma and we apply the Dhamma. However, when we're not mindful, we start running after this. We start thinking, okay, and trying to achieve self-satisfaction, self, so to stop going after the pig, what we have to do is we have to ask ourselves, why am I doing that? Why am I running after this? So you can replace self with, say, other things like money, houses, jobs, chocolate, whatever you desire, whatever you are aiming for. Like, I remember growing up, I used to be really jealous of any famous person my age. You hear this famous person that's the same age as me, right? It'd be worse if they're the same month, right? And I'd be really jealous, being like, how can they be famous? Why am I not famous, right? Because why? Because fame is also something that goes here. Fame, just pride, anything that you aim for goes inside here. The question you have to ask is, why? Why am I doing this? Why am I going after this pig? Why am I sacrificing something for this? Now, your mind will give you answers, because your mind is amazing at that. Your mind will always give you answers. When you ask a question, the mind will give you answers. And say, okay, because, you know, the self is important. I'm really important. I'm very important. Or say if it's something like a house is valuable. It's something with a lot of value. It's something that, you know, you really need. So when you ask yourself and you say self is important, okay, you have to ask, why is self important? Or is self truly important? Then you come up to this idea, well, what is the self? Because we always talk about self, Guru Handaru and Nayakandaru and all of our monks, we talk about, you know, the sense of self. But I really want you to ask yourself, is it true? Is there no self? Is it just a sense of self? I really want you to ask yourself that, because, you know, we hear sermon after sermon about the sense of self, but it may have become some sort of almost more of not an understanding, but more of a almost like a mantra, something that we've recited over and over again. I really want you to ask yourself, do I still believe that there is a self, or do I understand that it's a sense of self? Because, you know, we've heard it's a sense of self. So sometimes we miss that step. We miss a step of, you know, is it self or the sense of self? We miss it and we go completely and say, it's a sense of self. But inside, we still believe what? I, me, I'm here. I'm important. So you have to ask yourself, is it self or is it a sense of self? Because only in the Buddha's Dhamma do we question that. No other philosophy, no other science questions that. Science will always talk about what's happening to the observer, but they never talk about the observer. This is moving 5 meters per second according to me. But they don't question the observer. So this is why, whether it's self or a sense of self, is only questioned by the Buddha's Dhamma. No other science or philosophy actually questions that. Okay. So is it self or a sense of self? What is self? Now these are the questions you're asking yourselves. What is self? Self is me. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. I've been here for X, Y, and Z amount of years. Yesterday I did this, yesterday I did that. Now you ask yourself, okay, is that what I've been doing? How long have I've lived for X amount of years? What part of me has lived for X amount of years? Has the body? Now, these are the questions you should actually ask yourselves. Until you truly understand that it's a sense of self, you can't break this pig. Until you realize it's a sense of self, you can't break this pig. Because you'll be attacking other pigs, not this one. So what has been here for X amount of years? The body? Is the body self? Is that who I am? Because when we see a picture, we always look for who? Me. If someone is to show you a random picture, the first thing you look for is who? Even if it's a picture of desert, what's the first thing you look for? Was I there? So, is the body me? Now, of course, we've talked about this, and so has other numbers. So I'm not going to talk too long on this, but if the body is me, shouldn't I be able to control my body? But can I? You know how sometimes it's really cold, or sometimes when some people they don't have a meal, right? They don't have, say, lunch, they start shivering. Do you control that? I remember something that me and my sisters used to do is sometimes when it's really cold, your teeth start to chatter. You go right, and me and my sister will have a challenge: who can stop it first? Because can you stop it? Or no, we challenge who can keep it for the longest. Actually, that's something we challenged: who can keep it for the longest? Who can chatter their teeth for the longest? But is it something that we can control? Shivering. I remember. When you shiver, can you try to do something when you're shivering? Try to write when you're shivering. I remember one of our monks. He had missed breakfast or something like that, and he had to write something. So we gave him. He was writing with his pen, and he was shivering, and he couldn't write. He had his meal, and then he could. Right, that's beside the point. But when he was shivering, he couldn't write. But he was in control of his body, right? He was controlling what he was writing, right? No. And another example is, if you can control your body, if you can control your movement, we know to move an arm or a leg, you have to contract and relax muscles. How many muscles does it take to lift up an arm? If you think about it, there's actually more than, I think 25 to 27 muscles you use to lift up your arm. Do you know the muscles? 27 muscles to lift up your left arm. I mean, how many muscles is that, right? But we don't know. We don't control it. We can't control our height, right? We can't control our weight. We can't control, you know, our heartbeat, our breathing, even voluntary, involuntary movement. But then what can we truly control? In the body? You know, they say, you are what you eat. Yeah. The food that we digest becomes part of us. So if you had rice today morning, what are you? You are rice. You know, today you can have roti, right? Tomorrow morning, what are you going to be? Part roti. Think about it. Imagine you come. So let's say you've been coming to the monastery for the last, say for the last 2-3 years, right? There's a certain portion of you that is made out of what? Roti. So there's a good portion of you that's roti. And there's a good portion of you that's paripun, soya, and mellum. So there's a big portion of you that's just that. So like, you know, you, the body isn't you. That's why, you know, if you were to fall down, or, you know, a bee comes and stings you. A bee comes and stings you. What happens? What happens? Your body will change. You know, if you have an allergy, you're allergic to, say, you're allergic to cashew nuts. You eat a cashew nut. What will happen? Your body will change. See, your body can change in two ways. With an internal force or with an external force. So this is an internal force. And, you know, if something came and pricked me, that's an external force. That's how the body will change. Now, these forces, do I control them? So, am I my body? If it's not the body, then what can it be? Then it has to be the mind. Okay, let's look at the mind. What is the mind? The mind is what we use to think, to perceive, to understand the outside world. Okay. If I am my mind, can I control what I remember? Can I control what I remember? Can I control what I perceive? You know how great it would be if we can control what we perceive, right? You know, you're doing something and you see something that you're not supposed to see. And imagine you can just like shut off that perception. Can we do that? No. We can't control the perception. Okay, but one of the main points is that, you know, the self is something that we feel continuously. The self is something that we could feel continuously. We feel that we, you know, I have been alive for X amount of years. You know, my previous life, I was probably a human. The life before that, I was probably this, I was probably that. You know, I've been living through, you know, this samsara has been horrible to me. You know, I've been through the four great hells and through samsara. So I've been through what? Samsara. So I've been something that's continuous since the start of time. I've been there. But then if we looked at the processes of the mind is something that's what? That arises and passes away at millions of times a second. It arises and passes away. The next mind is the same mind. According to the causes, a different mind arises. So, is the mind me? Am I the mind? What about decisions? Okay, I give you a decision whether, you know, these pens are pretty much identical except the color. Choose a pen. I choose what? I choose red. If I asked you, why did you choose red? Is it you who chose red? There'll be reasons why. Because, you know, everything I've written is already in black. You know, red is a different color. I would like to see some red here. Or maybe because red, I don't know, you can give various reasons. Maybe this is because it's closer to you. Maybe because this is further from you. Maybe because you have something bad about black than red. Some reason, there'll be a reason why. So even your decisions aren't you, but something that has a cause. Because what's the cause of self? Nothing. Nothing can be the cause of self. Self is something that's causeless. Self doesn't have a cause. So again, these are just brief points which you have to really think about. You know, honestly, take a moment to think. Is it self or a sense of self? Because that's what the Buddha is. When a person asks Buddha, is there a self? Is there no, and then the Buddha doesn't give an answer. Is there no self? Again, the Buddha doesn't give an answer. What does the Buddha say? Avijja paccaya sankhara sankhara. And talks about the paccayasamuppada. Why? What is he trying to say? Is there a self? Is there no self? There's a sense of self. That's rooted in what? Ignorance. So we have to show ourselves, okay, if there is no self, if a self is there, then why do I feel this? Why am I feeling what I feel? Because we can't ignore that, can we? Oh, there is no self. But the question is, why am I feeling what I feel? I feel that I'm still here. I still feel that I'm still here. Why do I feel that? It's a sense. I'm feeling a sense of self. Now when you realize that it's a sense of self, you look at the piggy bank again. What's inside it? When you realize that it's not a self, but it's a sense of self. When you look back into the piggy bank, what do you see? What do you see? Nothing. You open the door and you see that there's nothing there. Because you realize I'm trying to protect what? A feeling. A sense. Now the pig is what? Empty. See, the pig, the only time this pig will be cut from the roof is once you attain Nibbana. Until then, the pig will always be there, but what's inside will change. So when you're mindfully aware, this will be empty. But the moment you are not aware, it becomes what? Filled with what? Self. So, sense. Once you realize it's a sense, now you realize there is no pig there, or there's no nothing inside the pig. Then you ask yourself, like, okay, then why do I feel a sense? Why do I feel a sense? And then you get, then this is when you need the Buddha to help. Without the Buddha, we don't know. We don't know it's a sense. We don't know why it's a sense. So the Buddha comes in and says, it's because there was a necessity. There was a necessity. The mind had a necessity to feel fixed. Because of a necessity, there was, well, because of the idea, there was necessity. Because necessity, there was vexation. Because of vexation, there was what? Insanity mode. Because of insanity mode, there was what? Feeling. Feeling what? The sense of self. So where did that come from? The idea. Idea of what? There's something fixed. Then ask yourself, is there something fixed here? Is there something fixed here? If we understand that there's no self but a sense of self, then what is really fixed? Now you take yourself on that journey. What is truly fixed? What is truly, you know, what is actually out there? Then you explain to yourself what? Everything is? Yeah, it's all cause and effect, a manifestation. Now you're going through anicca. When you go through anicca, what happens to dukkha? Because what is dukkha? Dukkha is you realizing that, you know, it's a sense of self. When you have to understand, you understand anicca, you understand dukkha. When you understand anicca and dukkha, then what do you realize? Going after this pig is? What's the value of this now? What's the value of this pig? It used to be, you know, 3.8 billion. Now what's the value? Now are you going to run after the pig? Now what's the point of running after an empty pig? You see a massive glass pig filled with what? Nothing. What are you willing to sacrifice for nothing? What's the point? Now are you running after pig? No, there's nothing. What's the point? It's an empty pig. So? But the moment you come out of your mindful awareness state, what happens? Pig again fills with what? Self. You forget that it's a sense, and then you realize, how am I, why aren't other people respecting me? Why is other people giving me, why is other people not saying teruan sanin to me? Why? Because of what? Self. This is why the journey to Nibbana is, that's the thing, enjoy this. This is how we started, right? Enjoy this. Enjoy the journey. You're playing a game here. Enjoy this journey. For as long as you're mindfully aware, this is what happens. When you stop being mindfully aware, this is what happens. You're playing a game. Red light, green light. This is a game here. Enjoy the game. Enjoy playing. Because at the end of the day, we have to just get rid of the pig. But enjoy playing this game. Enjoy it, because this is putting together the causes. Whether this pig disappears or not, should we care? That's why a lot of people are very focused on, you know, like, when will I become an arahant? You know, today I'm going to try to become an arahant. Today I'm going to try to be anagami. Today, I'm going to do so much. Don't focus on the result. Have the result in mind. Right? So you should know that there should not be a pig here. But enjoy the causes. Enjoy putting the causes together. So this is why join into these discussions that we have. Right, join into, you know, whenever you possibly can. So today we've got Dakkineyo. Right, enjoy accumulating the merits. For what? So I can one day get rid of my pig. Right. So while you're in the procession, enjoy every single moment. So this enjoyment isn't the joy of pleasure. Because the joy of pleasure comes from what? The relief of vexation. This joy comes from the understanding that I am going on a path to get rid of the pig. So even going on Dakkineyo, right? Doing, you know, go, you know, holding Buddha Puja, doing Dakkineyo, offering alms, cleaning the area, right? These also become things that give you immense amount of joy. So one day you'll be told to sweep the Dhammaho. The next day you're told to help with the construction of the kitchen. Okay. And the next day they say, don't do anything at all. You sit down and you listen, you look after this person. What's the difference now? You enjoy every single one of them equally. I get to see them all. Great. I get to help with the construction of the kitchen. Great. I get to help another person. Great. Which one's more valuable? Which one gives you more money here? Which one? Understanding that all of this is a sense gives us empty. It makes us empty. Gives us the empty feel. Therefore, it doesn't matter. today I'm this, tomorrow I'm that.
I'm okay. Today I'm I'm, you know. Today people come and say Theravan Swami, next day not. Okay, that's fine by me. Because why? Theravan Swami lives with where? Lives inside of me, not in the pig. Now today they give me a responsibility, tomorrow they get rid of it. Okay. Because is responsibility in here? No, what's inside here? Nothing. This is why the contemplation is essential here. That's why, you know, you can enjoy your life for as long as you're contemplating. The moment you stop contemplating, what happens is this fills with what? Self. I've been here for so long, right? You know, this person has this responsibility, that person has that responsibility. I have nothing. How can they do this to me? I'm so intelligent. I'm so smart. Why aren't they giving me other things? Where does that come from? I am important. Give me my importance. For as long as you're contemplating, for as long as you're mindfully aware, you will enjoy your journey. The moment you switch, the moment you stop, the moment you don't contemplate, you're not mindfully aware. Now the monastery can become a living hell. You know, I don't get to do what I want. You know, I really wanted to help with the construction, but they told me to not do anything today. I really wanted to help this person out, but they said, you know, let this other person help. Why is it though? Why is it all happening to me? That's because of this. So it's pretty much your choice whether you live in heaven or hell. That's why there's a beautiful story. I can't remember. Again, it's detail, but there's a story where someone was telling me that, you know, so this person doesn't, in the story, they explain what heaven and hell is in a really nice way. So a person enters a room, and in this room there are people, right? There's food on the table. However, there's food on the table, but however, everyone there is hungry. Why? Because their hands have been boarded up straight and they can't bend their arms. Right? This is the representation of what? Hell. In heaven, same thing. Same food, same situation. Their hands are still boarded, but everyone's happy and full. Why? Because they're not feeding themselves, they're feeding other people. So other people feed them. So it's your choice whether you live in hell or heaven. Entirely yours. No one else's. So by contemplation, you live in heaven. Heaven meaning you live with rapture and glee. However, if you're not contemplating, you'll still have bits of happiness here and there. Mostly you'll end up with living in your own hell. That's why hell and heaven are with you. No one else but you. So contemplate. So if you have self, everyone here, well, we all have self until we become arhats. We all have self in this biggie. But don't just take self. Don't just take self. There are other problems that we all face. For one person, it will be something. The other person, it may not be. Everyone is individual. Every mind is unique. I understand. So put that in there. One mind will want, you know, a title. The other, for example, there are people who want to be in the front of the queue. There are people who want to be in the back of the queue. There are people who want to be in the middle of the queue. Wherever you are in this queue, you know, it's still something inside here. It's still something in here. So for each and every one of us, it's different. So this one is self. You take something else. Sometimes it's best to take smaller examples at first to get used to it. You can try and attack a massive rock. right? It's going to help, but, you know, maybe start off with smaller ones. Chisel smaller areas. Chisel a smaller area at a time. So if you like chocolate, put chocolate there. If you like ice cream, put ice cream there. If you like dal curry, put dal curry there. Whatever you want, put it inside. And ask yourselves, why? Why do I want this? Why do I think this to be valuable? Why do I think this to be pleasurable? Because for as long as you're mindfully aware, that becomes empty. The moment you stop, it becomes full. So does that answer your question? So stop chasing after these piggies. Stop chasing after these piggies. You know, saying it is very easy. That's something that's, it's very easy, isn't it? You know, stop chasing after piggy, right? Don't go after piggy. It's very easy to say. Right? What we have to say is don't chase piggy, three words. But the actual doing of it, that's chaos. That's when it becomes chaos. No, it's something that's very, very, you know, I feel the same thing. You know, when you listen to sermon and you think, oh my God, it's so, you know, it's so simple. You know, A, B, C, D, E. Oh, wow, it's so easy. And then when it comes to the actual application, you realize, how did A become C? There was B somewhere involved, right? But I don't understand. I don't know how to do this. Because once you're surrounded by this environment, easy as pie, right? Just do A, B, C, D, E, and that's it. But once you're not surrounded by this environment, now what? I don't know. How do we do this? It's very easy to feel, you know. It's very easy to say, but not very easy to do. Not very easy to do. So think about these things, right? Try, so even though how hard it is, try. At the beginning, it's going to be difficult, but try. I promise it becomes easier. I promise you it becomes easier. Today is going to be hard, tomorrow, it's going to be easier. The day after, easier. The day you become an arahant, then it becomes second nature. You don't need to do it, it happens. You're going for an arahant. The pig is on the floor, but the pig is still there. But he doesn't need to. They don't need to continuously remind themselves that it's a sense of self, because why? They realize it's what. That's why it's on the floor. Because they realize it's a sense. There's no need to do anything. There's no need to do anything because they realize it. So keep practicing. Right. This is easy to say, but hard. It's hard to actually do. But it's like riding a bike. Start today, tomorrow becomes easier. The day after becomes easier. The day after becomes even easier. But remember, when you stop, if you stop, you are coming back to this. So pretty much, it's like the games. It is exactly like the games, because you can't stop now. Either you run after it or you don't run after it, but you can't stop the game. You play the game until what? Until the bullet goes through your head. Hopefully, before that happens, you get rid of the pig. But unfortunately, we can't say so. That's definitely going to happen. Like I said, are we willing to sacrifice our time? The most valuable thing we have. Are we willing to bet on our time that this is going to happen? That you'll survive the next 5 years? Death is always around the corner, ready to knock. ready to knock at your door. Just like you open the door for the Dhamma, there'll be a day they have to open the doors to death. We can't stop that. Unfortunately, we can't stop that. Whether you're just fived or you're 50, whether you're entering your 100th year, death is always by your door. So do it vigorously. Contemplate vigorously. Contemplate heedfully. Because who knows who's next? Who knows who's next? Who knows who death will claim next? You know, they say every second two people pass. Every second two people pass away. I don't think you realize how severe that is. Every second two people are gone. If we took the entire world, two people are gone. Which second is it going to be our last? This one or the next? So practice heedfully. Because we don't know when it's going to end. Right. Let's take a few moments to transfer all the merits required by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirit, listening to Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. So first and foremost, let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of these teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the merits to the Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down to the generation of noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend Dhamma. Take a moment to transfer the merits that we've acquired to all the members of the Mahasangha, present throughout the world, including all the chief prelates of the chapters, who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and committed themselves to the betterment of all sentient beings. And not forget, among them will be the monks and nuns residing in local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come in or shine. So take one chance to merits to Guru Sananse, as well as all the other monks present at the monastery, as well as Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let's take a moment to transfer merits and express our gratitude to those who made great effort to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be that by transliterating sermons, sharing them out with others, inviting us to join them. May the power of these merits, if any of them be born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and born in the blissful plain. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble worship of path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to transfer merits that we require to our devotees, friends of the monastery who forsake merits, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes every one of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, roads, medicines, as well as those who pass on know how to extend their well wishes. May the power of these merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble footpath, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's all take one chance of merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, friends and acquaintances, employees, and our elders, to all those who've helped us, supported us, assisted us in any way, shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical or mental ailments, may they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress, may they abstain from non-meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble footpath, and attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Exalting my own chance of merits to the devas, brahmins, spirits, demons, primarily the Sakudeva, as well as numerous gods and deities who have committed to protect and fulfill the Sambhasasana. Let's all take a moment to transfer merits to our garden deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May the power of these merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's all take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all that have been friends of family to us in this long journey in Sansara, and to all those who've helped us, support us, assist us in any way they could. Let's take a moment to transfer these merits. And also to the members of the armed forces, or the police force, who've sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those who lost lives in the war be their friend or foe. Rejoice in the merits required today. Also to take a moment to transfer merits to all those who lost their lives in natural calamities, such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, pandemics, reminding ourselves among them will be those who've been friends and family to us in the long journey in Sansara. Let's take a moment to transfer merits to them. May through the power of these merits, If any of them have been born in the world of planes, may they redeem themselves in born discipline. May by the path may they abstain from the meritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble path, and attain the supreme bliss in Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Finally, it's all resolved. May the parent blessing both the merits acquired throughout the day. We've been witness the event of many hundreds of thousands of Arhat Nuvanses, Arhat Mahin Nuvanses in this blessed land. And finally, may the power of all the merits acquired throughout the day, you and I and everyone who made this program a success, become an Arhat Nuvanse or an Arhat Mahin Nuvanse in this very life, in the era of the Gautama, the Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of Mahachupa Jain be with you all. The Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you. Raga ginnin midatnva Dvesha ginnin midatnva Moha ginnin midatnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravitnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravitnva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnvayo Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravitnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravitnva Raga gini niveva Dvesha ghini niveva Moha gini niveva Nivan sapa labeva Nivan sapa labeva Nivan sapa labeva
Tunwangi Susyananta Mahaguna Bilin Siyaloka Siyasatyoga Nibbana Paramasukhi Sukhitaravitta.